hitkaya959.co.za
to download the Point of View podcast.
So let me ask you this. Are you keen for your 12-year-old to get the vaccine? So we now have South African Health and Product Authorities approving Pfizer vaccine on individuals 12 years and older. 12 years and older. Are you one of those people who will be keen for your 12-year-old to get a vaccine? Maybe you're anxious. Maybe you've been waiting for that kind of announcement. So let's hear what officials have to say. Professor Musa Mushabela, who is a South African Health Products Authority, on the line with us. Prof, thanks for your time. Good evening.
Good evening to you and to the listeners. Thank you.
Prof, your take on 12-year-olds getting the vaccine?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I think that in a way, I think that it's the right direction that we are headed in as a country. But I think that it has caught us by surprise. And I don't think that South Africans have been prepared adequately for this. I think that I'm more excited about the introduction of the new trial by Nimolex and Spokomahati University in children using Sinovac than I actually am about this approval for Pfizer for the 12 to 17-year-old.
Expand on why you're more excited about that trial.
I'm excited about that trial because I think that we know that there is a need for vaccination in children or young people, teenagers and children, adolescents, that age group. And the reason is that ever since Delta came along, mm-hmm. we've been seeing increasing burden of disease in younger people. And we've also been seeing that when adults get vaccinated, the burden of disease shifts more to younger people, mm-hmm. including, increasing burden on hospitalization. Mm-hmm. But also, we've been seeing this problem with long COVID in young people that we did not know that it's going to arrive. So when we are seeing it, young people having disability, having debilitated symptoms beyond acute illness, it's not good, and it can affect them mentally for a long time. And also, I think for me, is that even though they are, the severity of disease and admission is still better than for adults, I think that there is a need to help prevent spread of disease because they can also spread disease from one place to another, from one person to another. So schools, for example, have seen a lot of outbreaks. Mm-hmm. With those outbreaks, when children go home, then parents get infected. Vaccines can help us disrupt that whole kind of pattern of disease and burden of disease in children. So I really think that there's a need to look into it, but I think that we need to do it systematically.
So then maybe help us understand your hesitation around this Pfizer and individuals under, well, not under 12, but from 12-year-olds.
Yeah, the 12 to 17-year-olds. Mm. So the data that SAHPRA has looked at is data, I think, that came mostly from the U.S. So Pfizer has been submitting updates of data, and here I speak under correction mm-hmm, because SAHPRA has not confirmed this yes. to me. But from the report that we received, that we know of a study of 2,000 kids that were between the ages of 12 and 15 that were looked at for Pfizer, and they had control group, those who had Pfizer and those who did not, and they looked at safety, they looked at efficacy and so forth. They realized that their reactions were similar to the ones that are approved. You know, Pfizer is approved for 16 years and above mm-hmm. in the U.S. In South Africa, it's approved for 18 years and above. Mm-hmm. But they just compared it with the ones who were 16 years and above and realized that there were no differences. With that data, it looks like it's quite compelling that you can go as far as 12 years. And many parts of the world, we know that they've been going as far as down as 12 years. Mm. So the data is strong globally, but it's not something that we have done here. It's not something that is really a priority for us because we have not covered enough of the adult population. Mm-hmm. So there's no rush to get there. But in other parts of the world, of course, The U.S. had already covered 35% of their population by the time they introduced, who were fully vaccinated, the whole population, not just the adult population, by the time they introduced vaccination for 12-year-olds. So I think that there's some sort of trade-off that we need to think of. We must not rush too soon to children when we have not covered people who are most at risk, but also we need to be able to demonstrate the data that has allowed us or encouraged us to take this step, but share this data with the public and prepare South Africans. Mm. You know, South Africans were caught off guard. Mm. And I don't think that's fair. I think that there's a lot more need for public engagement. And all SAPRA is saying, look, we just approved. We are not going to procure. It's up to Department of Health. It's almost as if the responsibility now has been shifted to the Department of Health to demonstrate why this may be necessary, to show the evidence and so forth. But I feel like SAPRA can actually come forward and do this and have this discussion that we are having, to say, where is the data? What does it look like? Do we need more local data and so forth?
Would it be SAPRA? Would it be Pfizer itself? Would it be government? Who's likely to communicate this and be trusted?
Yeah, no, I think at the moment, SAPRA is responsible for ensuring public safety. Mm-hmm. And I think if SAPRA is the one that's going to approve a vaccine, they're independent. They use their own data. Mm. Department of Health does not necessarily have the same data that they have, because all of these records are submitted to SAPRA. Mm. So I think that out of courtesy, even if they don't have to, SAPRA should actually engage with the public. Today, SAPRA was engaging the public on how to self-report adverse events. Mm. And this is something that we've been calling for 3 to 4 months. And so if they can do it in terms of public engagement around side effects, they can do it in terms of other forms of public engagement. It's necessary. We are in a pandemic. We need them to make this information available so that the public can have confidence in the decisions that they make.
Prof, what kind of questions should we be asking when it comes to, you know, if let's say there was a public conversation and we were to engage and also bring in our input, because we know so little about the science, what then should be the questions we should be asking, for instance, SAPRA?
Yeah. So I think that, a simple one question would be, the first question would be to say that you have made this decision. We trust that you've made it an informed decision. But show us, demonstrate to us, what is it that convinced you to make this decision? And that should not necessarily take a long time to explain. They need to just show the data and say, this is the data that has convinced us. Most of these things, they often will balance the data and the risks and benefits. And when they see the benefits are stronger, they then make that decision. So if the benefits are stronger, they need to demonstrate that. The next thing that I think is important to ask is about the fact that ever since South Africa rejected AstraZeneca, we've had this practice of, testing vaccines locally. It's not something that SAPRA is required to do, but we adopted a practice whereby if products are not tested locally or are not demonstrated to work locally, then we did not really go for them. So Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, they were demonstrated to work locally for adults. So, and for local variants, actually, at the time it was Beta, they needed to demonstrate all of that. So SAPRA needs to show how this is going to work locally. One of the reasons why Sinovac was not approved in South Africa, well, it was approved by SAPRA, but it was not purchased by the Department of Health, is that it has not been demonstrated to work effectively locally. And that is the practice that they have used. So one question that you may need to ask is exactly that. This Pfizer for children has not been tested in South Africa or anywhere in Africa. And we know that children are not small adults. They are independent people. Mm-hmm. And we need to demonstrate the safety. We need to demonstrate the right dosages for different age groups. Mm-hmm. We need to demonstrate the efficacy in these people, in this group, age groups. So has SAPRA, followed that, and do they not need to follow that? And then the third thing is something that we all understand. We work in an environment of mistrust. And, you know, anything that's going to come and be given to the public, we will treat it with suspicion like the public, you know. And we need SAPRA to understand that context, to navigate that context, you know, and say to us that there's a lot more work that needs to be done to convince the public why this is safe. What are the measures we've put in place? We've already learned with side effects, for example, that when these vaccines were introduced, SAPRA was not quick to address the question of side effects. Now they are addressing it, but it took a lot of time before they can address it. It will be good for them to address all the concerns beforehand rather than, you know, after the fact.
Am I hearing?
Those are the things that I would suggest that you would consider.
Am I hearing you say that that 2,000 sample was just not good enough?
The 2,000 sample in the U.S., if that's the only study that Pfizer is relying on to make their case, I'm not convinced. I think, look, the Sinovac trial is 2,000 only in South Africa. The full study is 14,000 young people between 6 months and 17 years old. 14,000 in about 5 countries. So that we've said it, that clinical trials need to have sample sizes in the 40,000 for them to be compelling. Because we know when we scale up to a much larger population, we may get some unexpected events. So we need to have larger sample sizes for us to be convinced. And I'm not saying that my concern is not meant to disregard the science and the overwhelming evidence that we are seeing, the compelling evidence. No, but it is the due diligence that we are asking for.
We're in a pandemic. We keep hearing SAPRA say very, very diplomatically that they really don't have capacity. Have we bolstered them enough to do exactly that, to not only look at the science, but also communicate the science to a public that, as you know, is very skeptical?
Yeah, no, I think that we have not done that enough. That's a fair point. And I think that goes not just for SAPRA, it goes for the different arms of the state and even the independent institutions. I think that even the Department of Health, for example, now and then I will play devil's advocate and say, can we please leave them to do what they're supposed to do, which is service delivery, and not try to engage them, you know, in the media and interviews all the time, you know, just so that they can also have the space to focus on delivering services.
Yeah.
So, but at the same time, we understand that the success of those, of that service delivery will depend a lot on them engaging the public. So I think this is where I've been calling for GCIS, government communication, to really come forward and work closely with these institutions to be able to convey the messages, because they can quickly get the information that the media or the public need and communicate it in a language that the public will understand. It's their job. And I would like to see them come forward and really do that. Only now and then they can invite SAPRA to answer questions or invite Department of Health to answer questions. But for the most part, the daily inquiries that we have, the daily questions we have, they need to be coordinating that, in my view. I may be wrong, but that's my own view.
Well, part of the problem is, as you said, you know, trust. We're skeptical. You are hearing more and more the distinction between anti-vaxxers and those who are just not sure about certain things. Correct. And they're just hesitant because they don't have all the answers. And the sense I'm getting every single time when we speak to government officials, there is a defensiveness about how they communicate. And one wonders who then would then take that responsibility.
You've hit the nail on the head. I think that on the whole, I should say that, you know, government made a good effort to communicate, especially at the beginning of the pandemic, especially when they centralized communication, because there was still so much uncertainty and so much room for miscommunication at that time. But I think a point came when they needed to decentralize communication and make sure that everyone participates in communication, but they held on to it and they didn't adapt very quickly. And I think that that's when you create opportunities for people who are, you know, set on misinforming others and disinforming others to then take up space to start influence negatively. And also we saw, you know, when we start to politicize something which is a public good, like, you know, vaccination, then you start to see political parties pulling in different directions. Mm. They're not singing from the same hymn book, and that's a problem. And we need to see the business sector singing from the same hymn book, because this is a universal issue for everyone in the country. It's not anything to do with partisanship or not. It's non-partisan, which is also why I think that, yes, the media also has a responsibility to communicate. All of us who are scientists and we see ourselves as independent, we have a duty to communicate. But the challenge then becomes when, you know, information is contained in the department or at SAPRA or somewhere where we don't have access, and that information needs to be made available. A lot of the times, you know, what I often see is when they present to Parliament, standing committee on health, that's when we get a lot of information, because there they have to account. Mm. But my question is, if they can provide that information to Parliament, why can't they provide it to the public?
Thank you so much for your take. Professor Musa Mushabela, who's a UKZN acting VC, I did give him a wrong title earlier. I really want to apologize for that. But thanks for your take, Prof. And obviously, we'll speak again soon.
Hit Kaya 959.co.za
to download the Point of View podcast.